One year ago tomorrow, a downed PG&E power line sparked a fire in the Sierra foothills of Butte County, California. Strong winds and unbelievably dry conditions caused the fire, which was named the Campfire, to explode into the worst wildfire in California history, devastating Paradise, California, and several small towns nearby. 18,000 structures were reduced to ash, 85 people lost their lives, and thousands more had their lives changed forever. A new documentary film about the Campfire hit Netflix last week and is being screened tonight at the Varsity Theater in Ashland by the Ashland Independent Film Festival. We have two guests here to talk about the film. Ashland filmmaker Gary Kaut is the documentary's producer. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. And back with us is Ashland Independent Film Festival executive and artistic director Richard Hershkowitz. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
So the Paradise film is not the first time that the two of you have worked together. Some of your other films have shown at the film festival, right?
That's correct. I think the first project I worked on that was at the festival was Conversations with God. Mm-hmm. It was before Richard's time, actually, all the way back in 2006.
And I remember the most recent. I remember Gary standing up at the Armory for our award ceremony, accepting the award for Best Short Documentary, which was a film he produced and was directed by Dre Cooper and Zachary Canapari, who directed the film we're showing tonight.
And so this is part of the film festival's initiative to offer films year-round. What's that looking like this year?
Yeah, we call the series Best of the Fests, and that's because, you know, we have a five-day festival, nobody can see everything. At the end of it, people contact us and say, oh, please bring films back. So frequently, the Best of the Fest series brings films that have high audience demand, but we also bring films that have been awarded at other festivals. And this one, Fire in Paradise, premiered at the Telluride Film Festival just a couple of months ago, and then won the award for Best Short Film at the Hamptons International Film Festival. So it fits in our Best of the Fest series.
So we're going to get into talking specifically about the film Fire in Paradise, but I wanted to play a bit of the trailer first because there's some very powerful voices there.
Extreme weather conditions and high fire danger are forecasted in Butte County. Please have your emergency plan ready.
It just seemed like a normal fire at first, and it got bad real quick.
In just a matter of 20 minutes, what looked like a calm sky was orange.
Our town is on fire.
That's ash coming down, not rain.
It was just call after call.
I can see the flame. It's in my door. It's getting big by the second.
You have to get out. No one can come to help you.
I just said, I'm gonna do it.
The first corner we hit, there was fire, and we were stuck in traffic.
Come on!
We had children on that bus.
We are surrounded. There was nowhere else to go.
Evacuate on foot!
Never thought I'd see embers and fireballs coming out of the sky.
Oh my God.
Mass destruction. Extremely rapid fire spread. Resistant to control.
I don't think we're gonna get out.
Heavenly Father, please help us.
Boom.
We're waiting 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 40 minutes.
I don't wanna die here!
And then it went completely black.
Some voices from the trailer for the film Fire in Paradise. Gary, drew you to the Paradise disaster as a subject for a documentary? I'm not sure how the credits all work out, but mm-hmm. Did the directors, Drea Cooper and Zachary Canapari, come to you, or was it the other way around?
Well, I've actually been working with Zach and Dre for quite a number of years now, so I'm in a great position where they are incredible filmmakers. They are incredible documentarians. And so when they think about a project that they want to pursue and explore, I get to be involved. So in terms of how, though, as a group we got involved, Dre lives in Oakland, California, and he actually has family that used to live in Paradise. His grandmother lived in Paradise, and his aunt got married in his grandmother's backyard. They've since passed, and no family lives there, but he has a strong connection to the community. Myself, my wife, used to live in Chico and worked for Butte County and spent a lot of time up in Paradise as well. And Zach, less so, has a direct connection, but certainly when the fire was going on and it was pretty apparent what was happening and how bad the disaster was, as documentarians, we're drawn to very powerful stories. And we decided we would go and just sort of see what the landscape was and the possibilities were for making a documentary. And over the course of several weeks, the first day we got there was Thanksgiving. So we didn't get there while the fire was burning in Paradise itself, which really was just a day. I mean, everything that happened to Paradise happened in one day. The fire itself lasted for 3 weeks. But by the time we got there, the search and rescue was well underway, and we started exploring and shooting and eventually figured out what we would focus on and how we would craft it.
So you were actually there just very, very shortly after. I imagine, you know, as a resident of Southern Oregon, you're also pretty well acquainted with the effects of wildfire.
Definitely. Being here over the last several summers and experiencing the bad air quality gave us, I guess, maybe a, you know, second row seat, you know, to this kind of thing. And I have to tell you, spending the time in Paradise that I did and driving the streets of Paradise after the fire and just seeing burned lot after burned lot, whether it was residential or commercial or industrial, it really didn't matter. Nothing survived. You know, in its entirety, there were patches that didn't burn for a variety of reasons. And I would have visions of driving the streets of Ashland and imagining the same thing happening here, which isn't out of the question. There's a different type of terrain, and the fire department this evening we'll talk about it after the screening. But there's definitely parallels. So it was eerie.
So a lot of the really powerful footage in this documentary, by the way, you can stream it on Netflix now. We're going to encourage you to go to the screening tonight in Ashland. But if you're not in Ashland or can't make it, it is available to be streamed on Netflix. So I watched it a couple of nights ago. And there's incredibly powerful coverage that came from people's smartphones. How did you go about gathering that?
Well, you know, in today's world, we all have smartphones. And even in the midst of a disaster, you know, people are prone to pull them out and document what's happening to them. And so there was a wealth of material that people had posted online, as well as people that we had interviewed. In the movie, there's about six main interviews. We actually interviewed about 25 people. And then just because that's just too many voices, unfortunately, for the medium of a documentary film. But people were sending us their footage that they had taken. We had an archival research team that was looking for footage as well. There was some news footage that we used, and then there was a lot of first responder footage from chest cams and dash cams that is used in the film.
We're talking with producer Gary Kaut, and also Richard Herskowitz is with us from the Ashland Independent Film Festival, about a new film that premiered just a few days ago on Netflix called Fire in Paradise. It's also being screened by the Ashland Independent Film Festival at the Varsity Theater in Ashland tonight. You can join the conversation by calling us at 800-838-3760 by phone, or if you'd like to send us an email, our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. We know that there are a lot of survivors of the campfire who have resettled in our region, so maybe you have your own story to share about your experience with the campfire. So you mentioned the interviewees, and you ended up with six or seven. How were they chosen?
Well, everybody that we interviewed, we found either through articles that had been written about particular people's stories. We interfaced with the first responders. A couple of them appear in the movie, and people that they recommended that we speak with, connections, friends and family. And we had another field producer on the ground there who was helping. And then in the post-process, we listened to them all again. We transcribed them all. We went through. And again, unfortunately, the medium of film is limited. And although this is a long, short documentary, it's just under 40 minutes, you still have to make choices. And they were tough choices to make because every story was incredibly compelling. But narratively, eventually we realized that there were certain stories that actually tied into maybe a physical space. And that was something that we could flesh out a little bit more, because really what we want, a large thing we want the film to be and for people to get, is a sense of what it was like to go through something like this. Hopefully, none of us will. But to have an understanding of what it's like, we think is very important. So the interviews that had a little bit more beyond just what they were saying and that we could represent is what we focused in on.
I was really blown away by the interviews with the first responders, because these are people who are trained to, you know, try to keep a cool head in mm-hmm. very trying circumstances. Mm-hmm. They're professionals. And on camera, every single one of them is choking back tears, even months after the fire. That was really moving.
Yeah. Captain Sean Norman, who features heavily in the film, he's a Cal Fire, with Cal Fire. He's come to several of our other screenings around the country and spoken at the talkbacks. And, you know, he said something very interesting at one of them that I think caught everybody's attention. And you see his humanity on the screen. But when a disaster is happening and the first responders are there, and of course they're, you know, shoving their own feelings down and they're just putting on their brave face. And even in Paradise, where their own homes were burning, you know, there were firefighters and police officers on duty knowing their own homes were burning and their materials were, you know, their possessions were inside and they didn't have a chance to go and pull them out. But anyway, so what Captain Norman said was, you know, not to forget that first responders are real people. They may not seem so when they have their uniforms on and they're, you know, in control and making things happen, but they're real people and they can suffer afterwards, you know, when the feelings come out. And so one of the things that Sean Norman doesn't like about what's happening with the new crop of fires is that his crews, they don't have time to recover emotionally.
Wow. Never thought about that, because they are coming fast and furious.
Mm-hmm. And they are.
Richard Herskowitz, you've watched I don't know how many films. You live, eat, and breathe film. What were your reactions when you first saw this documentary?
Well, I admire Dre and Zachary's work so much, and especially that the films are so cinematic. The film is beautifully edited, beautifully shot, and it deserved to be seen on a big screen. I think filmmakers love that, and I think the opportunity for people to also interact with it and have these talkbacks like they've been having in other cities around the country. But we had to have this in Ashland as well.
So we're talking with two people who are involved in a screening tonight of a new Netflix documentary called Fire in Paradise. Gary Kaut is the producer of the documentary, Richard Herskowitz with the Ashland Independent Film Festival. You can join the conversation this morning by calling us at 800-838-3760 by phone or send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org. I want to throw in a comment here from Ryan in Eugene. He just didn't want to be on the air, but sent this in by phone anyway. He says, privatization has hindered some of the rebuilding process. What are the top 10 lessons? I don't think we have time for the top 10 lessons, but what are some lessons learned from the fire in Paradise? Gary, any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I'm more an expert in filmmaking than I am in urban rebuilding. But one thing I do want to say is that we heard from one of the people in the film, Ray Johnson. He's a volunteer firefighter, and his story and his appearance in the film is wonderful. It's very compelling. And he sent us a voice. He called us, left a voicemail the other day, and he said he saw the film and he very much appreciates it, which we're happy to hear that the people who are in it don't feel bad about being in it. But he wanted to let us know that the foundation to his house has been poured and the walls are going up. Mm-hmm. So rebuilding is happening. It's going to take a long time. I think the city is definitely going to take a closer look at how that happens. I'm sure there were some issues of, you know, building codes and building practices. It's an old city. It's been there for a long time that they're going to rethink for sure.
I just read a survey yesterday that claimed that 90% of Paradise's population is gone now. So there are very few people living back there.
Right. It was a city of 30,000 people, and then the other communities around Magalia and Concow. So it was a very large group of people who were displaced. And a lot of people, there are definitely hurdles in terms of the building permits. So they're not just handing them out willy-nilly, but there are a lot of people who just don't want to go back. It's too painful.
So another compelling story, we talked about the first responders, the two teachers. Mm-hmm. Tell us about them.
Yeah, Mary and Abby. Talk about two people who have a tough enough job already, you know, being being elementary school teachers, and then suddenly to have to wear the mantle of hero. And that's, yeah, there's no other word you can use for them. They took it upon themselves to shepherd a group of kids away from school and out of the area. And it's they talk about, I don't want to give it away, no spoilers. There's plenty of places you can find spoilers. But I'll just say that they are incredible people. We were really happy to be able to tell their story.
I have to say, we're all tearing up here in the studio when we're talking about these two teachers from Paradise. So can you describe your own, the emotions that you went through when you were making and editing this film?
A lot of crying, a lot of sadness, a lot of disbelief. Sometimes it was just so overwhelming, you just kind of shut down and you just do the work, you know. I imagine that's kind of what happens, you know, when you're in a situation like this, hopefully anyway. It's almost the only way to get through it. But Zach and Dre are – one of the things that makes them great documentarians is they're so empathic and they're great interviewers. And they have a style that we've used in other films as well that I think really draws that out. It's called the Interrotron Method, it was been used in documentaries for a while. But it just really makes it all very, very personal. At the same time, it makes it even almost harder to conduct the interview. But I was in a side room listening and really just trying to stifle my tears through so many of them. I watch it and I cry, and I'm talking about it here in the studio. You guys are looking at me.
It's a good thing we're on radio. We're gonna, if you guys want to slip your headphones on, we're going to take a call here on the Jefferson Exchange. This is Hillary calling us from Humboldt County. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, you're on the air. Go ahead. What's your question?
Well, I don't really have a question. I have a comment. I have a very dear friend who was a victim of the Camp Fire. She lived in a mobile home park that was just razed to the ground. She fled to first to Sacramento, where a hotel there was very gracious and accepted her. And actually, there was somebody at check-in who paid for her accommodations there. She then came up to Humboldt County, where she had lived before. And FEMA maintained a list of hotels that had agreements with them. And she went to register at one after calling and being told, yes, we'll take you. And when she got there, they said, no, we really don't do that anymore. And then she stayed with people here in Humboldt who helped her. And she ended up being able to get into the FEMA trailers at the Yuba City Fairgrounds. And she got there, and she's disabled. And they gave her a trailer that exacerbated her disability, and she requested accommodations for disability, and she was told that FEMA does not accommodate disability. And as an advocate myself, I did some research and found that under the Obama administration, there had been dozens of FEMA workers trained in disability accommodation. But when Obama went away, those workers were disbanded. And currently, there are no disability accommodations being offered by FEMA. So her disability was exacerbated, and she ended up going from a state of being able to walk and being ambulatory to being sometimes in a wheelchair, but all the time with either a walker or a cane. She has since moved to Grants Pass just within the last month, and she is much, much happier. But I was kind of shocked at both the attitude of people who are listed as contracting with FEMA to provide emergency housing, who just ignore it, and with FEMA themselves for total lack of acknowledgement of people who may be disabled.
Well, Hillary, thank you. Thank you for sharing that story. I'm sure that with the aftermath of the campfire, there are many, many stories just like that of people just trying to survive after they've lost everything.
Yeah, sorry to hear about all of that. dealing with the aftermath of a disaster of that size, of course, is difficult, and it strains resources. To not even have some of those resources in place where they should be, of course, is terrible. It's the public, it's a loss, losing the public trust. That all of that being said, we saw the diaspora that happened after the fire. There's actually a website. I think it's a Google map of where are the paradise, the paradise survivors are, and it's spread out all over the country. One of the things that I now advocate for after a fire like this, or even in Los Angeles, which didn't see nearly as much destruction and very few fatalities, but there certainly were a lot of people who were displaced for a short period of time. And what I try to tell people, I posted it during the fires on my Facebook page, is if you are yourself not in danger, if you are in danger, get out. If mm-hmm. they say get out, get out. It's for real. But if you're not one of those people, but you know people who might have been told to get out, please open up your homes. Give people a place to go. It's a very disorienting time. It's a very scary time. And sometimes it's shelters. The alternative is shelters, which are not comfortable by any means. It could be hotels, which may or may not accommodate you. Plus, they get filled up super fast. So, especially if you're close enough, do what you can.
Gary Kaut is the producer of Fire in Paradise, which is a Netflix documentary, just hit Netflix a few days ago. And Richard Herskowitz, the artistic director of the Ashland Independent Film Festival, tell us about where and when people can see the film in Ashland tonight.
The film screens at the Varsity Theater tonight at 7 p.m., and tickets are still available. It's more than half sold at this point, but there are tickets still available at ashlandfilm.org, and whatever remains will be on sale at the door.
And also afterwards, there's going to be a discussion with members of the
four members of Ashland Fire and Rescue, including Chris Chambers, and then Gary Kaut will be there as well.
Actually, one of the firefighters, or maybe more than one, but I know that there was a contingent from Ashland who went to the campfire to help fight it last year, and another group, as we probably all know, just got.